This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, friends. All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. I'm Kyle. He's Robbie. Robbie, how are you today? Anything new in your world? Catch our listeners up on your life.
Well, two things immediately spring to mind. We are entering the third trimester period here of...
Okay, hold on. Have we even announced that to our listeners?
I think I'm realizing we haven't.
Oh, let's go! I think breaking news.
Yeah, we've talked about it in various places. I think it's probably filtered out from Candace's social media posts and things. We're expecting a baby girl on October 29th.
Getting close.
But, you know, hey, maybe she comes early and y'all share a birthday.
October 20 for the win. Congratulations, man. I'm excited for you. I think being a girl dad is the best. So you're going to love it.
It seems pretty cool. Candace is doing great. I am just here, kind of just, you know.
Yeah, you don't do much during the pregnancy. Yeah.
But one thing we have done as we're
you know what you are doing, ready, by the way, is you're preparing for the no sleep by just working insane hours and already not getting sleep.
So now
you're conditioned.
Yeah. Well, honestly, yeah. Candace was like the one thing that on the one hand, it's been great because I have had a crazy work year, which means I've sort of been able to front load a lot and hopefully buy some time in November. But the flip side of that is I'm going to be entering this period that is like a famously low sleep period already at sort of an extreme sleep deficit that I just cannot seem to recover from.
Yeah. I mean, but positive is even if you come in extremely charged, it's going to wear off. Like one day in, you're tired anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think I would rather be tired staring at a small human than tired staring at a small screen.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, all things considered, maybe it's a setting
positive
expectation. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's actually a move in the right direction.
Yeah. You're going to love it.
Yeah. We have been, it's kind of just been planning for the next phase. It feels like it's coming really quickly now. Now that we're sort of, something about like hitting August to me always feels like a real, like the countdown to the end of the year kind of starts.
Oh, I think that's fair.
You know,
I feel that too. July firmly feels the middle of summer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once August starts, it's almost football season. You start thinking about the weather getting cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is also so strange. It's like people talk about how, you know, you get older and you've got less time. Like as there's more time behind you, then like the way that you experience time changes. And so everything moves more quickly because it's all like a smaller percentage of your life to that point.
Sure.
And I think that it is weird, like even in high school, you hit August and it's like, oh, this is the start of the school year. And then it's like by the time you get to the end of that first semester, same for college, really, it's like, wow, this has been like a lifetime. You know, like you feel like you've been in that grade or in that year or class or whatever forever. And now I just feel like the time between August and December is just like
nothing
instant. Yeah, almost. Like I look up and it's like it just became fall. But
sure.
So I feel like that's coming quickly. The other thing I was going to say, and I'm just curious if any of our listeners have watched this. I told you this in San Diego. Candace and I randomly a couple of months ago started The Walking Dead back from the beginning. I had watched the first couple seasons back when they were airing and then fell off. But, you know, Candace likes stuff like that. And so I always thought that if we kind of had the right moment that we would enjoy it. And so that's kind of been a fun, like to have a show like that, that is that long, that's kind of the classic network television rhythm, has been weirdly comforting, even though it is like a very dark show, obviously. So that's been like, it feels like this journey that we've been on that's weirdly corresponded with like this, the pregnancy, and this, it's, I feel like now it's like a race to get
finish
the show before the baby comes, because I feel like that's probably not something that we should should have on around a small child.
What season are you in of how many seasons?
We've been plowing through, man. We just finished season 7 of 11.
Okay,
so
yeah, you can make it.
Yeah, I think we will. And it's fun that the like 40-minute episodes generally is kind of a nice change of pace. Like when I'm used to the like hour long or closer to hour long like HBO lengths. But yeah, I'm curious if anyone listening is a big Walking Dead fan. I've also, it's been a great opportunity to go back and read the comics, which I never read. And that's been fun. I told you this in San Diego, you know, I'm a big fan of the Invincible show, which is based on a Robert Kirkman comic. The Walking Dead is also based on a Robert Kirkman comic. He's also very involved in both of those. He was at San Diego, by the way, but I think that the panel that he did was maybe earlier in the week before we got there.
Thursday, maybe.
But yeah, so... Nice. You know, two things, one a lot more important than the other, but
yeah,
both relevant.
I'll be interested to see how you guys handle screen time in the Earl household, because, you know, you're not supposed to do a lot of screens, but you guys got a lot of stuff going on that screen in the evenings.
You know, we actually have, we've thought about it, and I think that our plan is, when it comes to like watching things like movies and shows, I think that we are going to really try to confine the experience to physical media, in that like we've got a separate kind of TV game room area, and I think that like we've been meaning to get a Blu-ray player, because we have a lot of stuff that's been on disc from either old
your DVDs PlayStation
that we've had, or yeah, we'll but play. Like for a room in there that's like, I think that's one thing that it's something about the endless options that come with streaming services and the autoplay and the recommendation and the like even if you click on like the Marvel section of Disney Plus, it's like it's clearly designed to capture like a kid's attention. Like it's very colorful, and like
I had a little bit of that same experience a couple weeks ago when I was in Michigan. My parents still have TV. I think it's YouTube TV, but it's amazing the difference. Like last night, Annika and I have nothing going on, so I open up all the platforms. I open up HBO, Disney, Netflix, Apple, and I'm just kind of going through, and I spend probably 25 minutes just not selecting anything, realizing I've seen basically everything I want to see. If I wanted to see it, I've seen it.
Right.
But you end up not watching a lot of things. But then like contrast that to, I'm sitting in my parents' living room and we're going through YouTube TV and The Last Jedi is...
Right.
Halfway through, and it's the only movie on the movie channel.
Yeah.
So we click on it and I'm like, this is kind of fun to watch. They made the choice for me. So then we actually pause it and open it up on Disney Plus and watch it without commercials. And then same thing happened with, I think it was Guardians of the Galaxy. Like nothing else is on. oh, Guardians of the Galaxy is on one of these channels. So we watched Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was like, it was kind of nice that the decision was made for you. I didn't have a choice. That was the movie you were going to watch, you know?
No, it is. I think that's right. I mean, for adults as well, but especially like I've been around so many, like kids of my friends and nieces and nephews. And I just think it's really, there are so many things that are trying to compete for their attention. And it's like, we've created these apps and devices that like are almost impossible for us to ignore. And I think that then it's like, if we can't ignore like the flashing lights and sounds, then I definitely don't think that like a baby or a little kid is equipped to. And so I think it's like, if they watch a movie and Disney Plus is like, oh, hey, here you go. Like, you probably want to watch these other three things. Well, now they like, they're going to be mad if they can't watch the other three things. But if it's just like, hey, you know, do you want to watch Lion King? Lion King's over. Do you want to watch Lion King again? Then I think, I don't know, hopefully it starts to narrow that, but we'll see. Yeah. I also just am obviously someone that appreciates physical media in general as a person that owns a lot of vinyl.
You want to impart that wisdom to your child, pass it down.
Right. Physical media. By the end of it, we're just going to be a full Luddite family. Just nothing electronic at all. Like cave drawings. But what about you? How's your post San Diego time been?
It's been good. It's been good. The only thing I wanted to share today is that I saw yesterday was officially 15 years of The Other Guys. The Other Guys released 15 years ago yesterday. And so there were clips making the rounds. I still think it's my favorite comedy of all time. Michael Keaton in that movie gives the most outrageous performance. It's unbelievable. The comedic timing. I just saw the clip yesterday of Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell sitting on the couch and his wife walks in and that whole like, no, who is this? I'm Dr. Sheila Gamble. No, for real. Who is this? He's like, you come in here dressed like a hobo. No, come on. Seriously. It's the old ball and chain. And then she tries to kiss him and he turns her down. No. You know what I'm talking about? And Michael Keaton with, I got two jobs. I got this one and my other job at Bed Bath & Beyond. And his delivery of that stuff, like Bed Bath & Beyond is a perfect choice. But I think my favorite thing is he tells a joke in front of the guys. Shake your, you know what, this pissing contest is over. Uh-huh. But then he does this little like, that was pretty funny. Like, I got myself. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that makes me laugh. Subtle, you know what I mean? He has this look like, yeah.
I love when he's like, when he's at Bed Bath & Beyond and he like mixes up his like briefing to the group.
The new bath mats are in. Also, there's a raping in Crown Heights. Oh, sorry. Other job. You know, I just ignore it. And then he goes, well,
you know what? Don't ignore it.
If you live in Crown Heights, don't ignore it. Just walk in Paris. That's what he says. It's so good. All the Bed Bath & Beyond employees are like, what the? Anyways, if you haven't seen The Other Guys, shout out to that movie. I know there was a run of, some people just aren't into Will Ferrell, but he's one of the biggest comedians we had. And he was on a run there for a while with that and Ricky Bobby and Blades of Glory and Wedding Crashers and, not Wedding Crashers, sorry.
No, Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, I guess he does have the camera. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of old school. Old school Anchorman, Wedding Crashers cameo, and then those. Yeah, but The Other Guys is kind of my favorite just because I think it's a little bit more clever. I love them all, but it's got a plot, actually.
Yeah.
And like I said, Keaton is a huge ad in that, and there's some other funny people too, and The Rock and Samuel Jackson make cameos, then Rob Riggle's in it, and Mark Wahlberg, and it's amazing.
Well, and it's like, that movie's fascinating to me because Adam McKay, that was really his transition from, or like the last straight up comedy, I think, before he kind of moved into like The Big Short and Vice and Don't Look Up and doing more like not serious, but not just straight comedic films. Sure. But The Other Guys is kind of weirdly both, because it's like, if you watch the credits, like he's really getting into like the like he's starting to preview what he would do in The Big Short. Like he's getting into like Madoff stuff, but he's also just getting into the kind of corruption financial and the crisis. Finance system. And so it's interesting that way, but it's also Candace and I are wanting to go see the new Naked Gun movie.
I can't wait. But hold on one second. Before we transition off that, I think it's also just so fun that Will Ferrell, he often plays the very goofy character, which I love, but this movie's kind of fun that he's the nerd that's so straight-laced and everything, and that's the joke. He never does his typical kind of bit.
Right.
It's playing off Mark Wahlberg being like way too mad and anger management type cop, and he's the straight one that doesn't, you know, analytical guy, and I think that just works so well. The Naked Gun is getting such good reviews. I didn't go to – I got a screener invite, didn't go. I was busy. We were doing something else. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And I really want to see it. I have early memories of my dad being such a big fan of Airplane and that genre of movie. Yeah. And apparently it's unbelievable. I've seen some other podcasts and like other accounts talk about specifically that genre of comedy coming back.
Yeah.
And praising like, and it's just so fun. Apparently like Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson like really hit it off in real life, and it's just like nonstop jokes that land. Apparently, I've seen some videos of screen reactions of people just like just old guys just bursting into laughter the whole time.
Yeah,
I cannot wait. And then Weapons is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah,
which is like it looks like a Jordan Peele type horror movie, like a very thoughtful horror movie. So I posted my favorite movies on Twitter today, and I just did honorable mention is that I haven't seen Sinners. And I'm excited to see the Naked Gun and Weapons. So,
I thought about that because Candace and I went back and watched the original Naked Gun, which she had never seen. And yeah, my dad was so into those movies as well. And so
dumbest humor, but amazing.
But it's so dumb, but it's also like
it's so good.
It's kind of like Monty Python-esque. Yeah, yeah, you know, very like a lot of like wordplay, but really it's like it's slapstick mixed with like really like on the nose wordplay jokes that like are dumb but also
like an airplane. All right guys, let's get some pictures, and all the photographers walk in and take the photos off the walls,
right? Like
like that, like
it's so like it's so dumb, but it's also like it's not, it's only obvious once it's been delivered. Like it is really funny and creative. And different, the like famous, it's a very like specific.
Surely you can't be serious,
right?
I am, and don't call me Shirley.
And that, like so watching stupid. The Naked Gun, I just realized how much the other guys is kind of in that tradition.
I saw one clip from the Naked Gun, and they posted on social media like Who Framed Him. It's just him like walking into a house like a crime scene, and I need to see it because I think it's gonna be so funny. He's like, "Is anyone here? Hello." And it's all these things like he steps in some blood that's been placed and he's like, "Oh, what's this?" Then he like, there's a note that says, "Pick up this knife." And he like picks it up. So he's got like all his DNA on that. And it keeps like escalating to he finds the guy in the room and he picks him up, but he lifts him up too high and his head gets chopped off by the fan. So now he's holding the dead body when the people come in with no head. It's like that kind of stuff where it's like, yeah, it is very, the other guys does play off that humor for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, it's like, all that
this file's got more really fingerprints on it than Danson's wife. No offense, Bob. And then Bob goes, "Yeah, no, I get it." You know, like that's the kind of humor, right?
Right.
Yeah. I interrupted you so many times. I'm excited to see it too. I think we'll make it happen pretty soon. I feel like you'll love it. I think Candace would love it. That kind of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. She enjoyed the Naked, like she laughed a lot at the original. I think it's just, it's good to see a straight up comedy doing well. Like I'm trying to think, they don't make them really. I mean, like, you know, there was that era you were talking about with Will Ferrell, like the Hangover movies were huge, but yeah, it's just not there. You don't really have cultural moment comedies like that. I mean, like maybe Barbie was that to some degree, but that was sort of a different thing.
Yep. Agreed. I listen to Smartless all the time, and they lament that all the time because they're all comedians, but just that kind of comedy, they talk about it a lot, how it just doesn't get made. They've even had like producers of studios come in to, as their guest, to talk about why does that comedy not get made anymore? Like, what about that in the theaters doesn't work the same way? And streaming's changed all that, and, you know, direct to streaming with some comedies and stuff. But yeah, like the big, we all need to go to the theater and laugh together kind of comedy. It's been a long time for sure.
It feels like the emphasis, which will maybe lead into some stuff I want to talk about today as we're kind of catching up. But I think that there's been for a while such an emphasis on, now that we can watch these things on streaming so quickly, and now that there's so many options, let's only go to the theater for the big action movies, like the big things that are going to feel like, I mean, we will have that conversation sometimes, like, is this the kind of thing that we want to go see on the big screen? And for what we normally mean by that is like a Christopher Nolan movie, a superhero movie, like a big sci-fi movie. And so you often think like, oh, a comedy, well, we can just watch that at home and be the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think that there is something lost there.
I think even back to like the office watch parties, it's just more fun when you're all laughing together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We'd have 12 people over just to laugh, and then the jokes are funnier.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, we've lost that. I'll support it. I'm going to go in the theaters. I'm going to be back in Michigan actually in a couple of weeks. And there's a fun theater there that does the dinner thing. It's only like four rows. I'm going to go to that and I'm going to watch the Nick again. Okay. I have five other topics in this new notebook, my first page in my new notebook. Five other topics that we're just going to blaze through. Today is basically a catch-up episode, but don't let that minimize the importance of it, because these five topics are all pretty exciting. So in order, Robbie, I want to say a little word on San Diego Comic-Con. Robbie and I, as you've heard a million times referenced, got a chance to go to San Diego Comic-Con as press. And it was an experience, definitely a learning experience. First of all, it's way bigger than I thought it would be. I know it's big, but I didn't realize it basically takes over that whole western part of downtown. They have roads closed. People are at all the restaurants, you know, 10 blocks up. We walked past the baseball stadium and still had waits at restaurants that far up. They have pop-up stands and trucks outside of the conference center as well. And then the conference center is like 40 ballrooms, essentially, where you can see there's almost something going at every second in every ballroom, with just thousands of people walking by, thousands of people walking by wearing cosplay and all these different outfits. It's a wild experience. I think my biggest takeaway, Rob, and I said this to you while we were there, as someone who's not fully in that world, because admittedly, a lot of the studios, the film side of things, weren't there this year, which is more my scene.
Which is also rare for San Diego. That's normally a big, at least in recent years, a big piece of it.
But we've mentioned this before. I can always appreciate just being around people who are passionate about things. And it struck me that this is their Super Bowl. The writers that are coming for this thing, and people that the 50 people that sit in on some tiny, you know, artists panel. It was cool to me to see how excited the people were that were asking the questions, and just the chance that these guys get to be there and talk about it. So I said to you, it's just fun that they get a platform for a week where they're a huge deal. You know, and this guy may go back to his small job and wherever, not, you know, making tons of money or doing it. But for 1 week, they're celebrated to a crazy large degree.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
It is fun. And it kind of gives you, I'm biased, but I really do love the comic side of Comic-Cons.
That in
New York, you know, but that's the thing, is like people talk about how a lot of them become more just like pop culture conventions, which is also great. And I love all that too. But I think that one thing that's nice about the actual comic part of it is those are made, like we've talked about, by just a handful of people, and you can have them there, and there are very little frills. It's really easy to have like substantive, meaningful conversations about the work that people are doing. Whereas the stuff with the studios, there's just a lot more kind of production around it. Like, you're not going to just wind up talking to someone that's writing Peacemaker. You know,
like, we were sitting in on a panel and Dan Slott is sitting next to us.
Right.
So you can just quick say, hey, Dan.
Blah, 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 it's like, and that's you. I mean, like rode on the escalator with David Marquez.
Right.
You know, like all actually a lot of friends of the show that That's we true. Saw in kind of various capacities. And
it's kind of extra cool when you start seeing the studio world merge with that a little bit. Like with Fantastic Four, Marvel released a behind the scenes of these comic creators getting to go to the set and like get a really full experience. Really cool video you can find on YouTube. But on that video, you see Dan Slott, who we talked to. You see Chip Zdarsky, who you're going to hear from next week.
Yeah.
There was probably four Ryan friends North. Of the show, on that thing, and then getting to see them at San Diego Comic-Con is kind of fun. It's that extra bonus interaction you can see. And by the way, we didn't even bring up just the insanely large, sprawling center convention. The pop-up area is jam-packed for probably a quarter of a mile. That's not a joke.
Yeah, yeah. And you got a video, I think, of like the crazy Lego setup of the convention.
Somebody built the convention center and the interior of it with Legos, including all the stands and people walking by. I got some pictures. I posted that. Marvel Studios had a cool pop-up where we met Herbie.
Very cool. Yeah. Meeting Herbie was awesome.
We met Herbie and they have the Fantastic Four outfits there. And they had a giant screen playing behind the scenes of Thunderbolts and things like that. We saw that we got some Thunderbolts ice cream.
Yeah.
But then others. Yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff. The Alex Ross thing that we're going to be talking about in Friends from Work Plus. He has a really cool display of all of his art. Ryan Meinerding, I think is his last name.
Yeah.
His
that
setup,
was cool.
You can see the actual Marvel Studios hand painted artwork that he has like as conception art, but it's basically like, it's exactly the same. It's what they used. Exactly.
And it's like what, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't heard it, if you go back a couple of years, we interviewed Andy Park back in, I guess, 2022. And he has been part of Ryan Meinerding's team for a long time. But I think often they will sort of split projects, you know, where like Andy's handling this upcoming movie or show and Ryan's handling this one. And so it was really fun to see Ryan's stuff, you know, because we've seen some of Andy's and talked to him several times. But yeah, that's the thing, is there are just so many, like every time I'm there, I'm struck by, even if you never go to the panels, there are just a million different things to interact with. And so yeah, if you have any interest in that stuff at all, like, and especially San Diego, because there is the pop culture element, it's really fun. And the costumes that people pull off are wildly impressive.
Remarkable.
I do want to say before we move off of that, one thing that we got to do that is really unique to San Diego is go to the Eisner Awards.
That's right.
One night. And which is for people that don't know, it's billed as kind of the Oscars of comics. Like you're saying, this is sort of the opportunity for these people to have their work recognized, and it goes all the way down. Like you have
be celebrated
writers, artists, colorists, letterers, like everyone that's involved, and even to like the actual editions of things that are put together. Like there was an artist edition of Batman Year One that won several awards just from like a design and packaging standpoint. And so it really is cool to see like everyone whose hands touch these different things that are published, they all kind of have an opportunity to get an award and be recognized for that. And so it was really fun to be in the room with a lot of comics creators that I admire, but also some that we've had on the show previously or will be on the show in coming weeks.
That's a perfect transition to one other thing I want to share, which is that Robbie and I are taking a more dedicated effort to growing Friends from Work Plus. And over on Friends from Work Plus on Monday, we are going through the comic book Marvels by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. Speaking of Alex Ross, hence the transition here. It's really fun. Basically, we're starting a new series called Marvel Comics 101, and it's for people who have never read comics or didn't know where to start but want to get into it. Robbie has specifically curated a few books that are just easily accessible, not crazy long running, and give a good glimpse into what makes comics great. Like if you don't like the book, then you probably just won't like comics. And we just finished I read it too, by the way, going through the first one called Marvels. Really fun look at it. We're going to be talking about that on Monday on Friends from Work Plus. And then we are already like kind of making a plan now. Instead of saying generically, look, we'll get to some episodes, it's now saying, no, go to organicpricebooks.com, order Spider-Man Blue, and then read it and come back in a month and we'll talk about it here on the podcast and we'll have a discussion going on Patreon and Discord. So that's really fun, but that's not the only thing. We're also going to try to take a more dedicated effort towards Screensaver. Anytime you and I are talking about other film projects or TV projects that we're passionate about. So this week we released a free preview of that by giving out our Superman episode, but those are the kind of episodes that are going to be over on Screensaver. Yes, on the main feed we'll reference that we've seen Superman and stuff like that. But if you want a full review or a deep dive into it, that's on Friends from Work Plus. And then we're trying to make a more dedicated effort towards just bonus content of the MCU. So today we're going to talk a little bit about my second viewing of Fantastic Four, but then we'll probably just hop on Friends from Work Plus at some point and also chat more Fantastic Four. So if you want even more of it, or I have an idea for an episode of the top five twists in the MCU, we both pick five. That's the kind of episode that will also be the main driver of Friends from Work Plus. So we're going to try to be real specific about that so you kind of know what's coming, what you're going to get over on Friends from Work Plus. It's $8 a month, and you can get it on Apple, Spotify, or Patreon. But my last announcement for today, we're doing this new thing, which is kind of cool. Patreon officially announced annual memberships. So instead of paying $8 a month, you can sign up for a full year, which obviously helps us. But it also helps you because you can save 10% off the overall price if you commit to a year. And if you do want to support this podcast, which by the way, it's the main driver of this podcast, you supporting us on Friends from Work Plus. If you want to do that, we're doing a thing where if you show me that you signed up for a year, you can get any free merchandise item from Friends from Work. Hence these shirts laying on the couch behind me. I've been mailing shirts for people who have already. I just messaged our Patreon users last night and said, if you want to upgrade to a year-long subscription, let me know and I'll send you a free merchandise item. And I've already been sending them out. So that's really cool. But if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a member of Friends from Work Plus and you want to support this podcast and keep us going, check out Friends from Work Plus, check out an annual membership on either Apple or Patreon. And if you show me that you have signed up for a year, thank you so much. We're eternally grateful. And I'll mail you any merch item for free as long as we have it still. Like we're out of the Spider-Man hoodie and we're out of the Love and Thunder t-shirt, but I have some Doomsday One left. I have some tumblers, etc. So there's stuff left and I want to send it to you for free. Thank you for choosing to support us. If you do that, we love you for that. Okay, Robbie, three other things here. The next thing I want to transition to in really quickly is, have you been seeing all this Spider-Man news?
I have.
For listeners who don't know, Spider-Man Brand New Day comes out next July, and they have officially begun filming in Glasgow and have been doing that now for about a week or two. Man, this summer, my Twitter feed, which is a lot of sports and some other stuff, my personal Twitter feed, the For You section, has been heavily populated by comic book stuff, Fantastic Four, Superman, etc. But nothing is quite like Spider-Man is my takeaway. Oh my gosh, my entire feed is every single behind the scenes shot of people trying to get a glimpse of them filming Spider-Man. Nothing moves the needle quite like Spider-Man. Maybe not even Avengers. Avengers will because of the big moment, like the big moment it creates, but Spider-Man fans are something else, dude. It is crazy to see the mania, but also just the level of critique, and you know this, but the level of critique on like every line on his suit.
Yeah.
Like someone will be like, this is a heaven on earth. Like I saw like, if someone said, if Punisher gets like an Iron Man type upgrade, I'm going to blow my brains out on Kevin Feige's driveway. It's like, that's the kind of level of mania where it's like, it makes me laugh, but it's, oh my gosh, this is the greatest suit ever created. I wish they put one more line on the bottom left panel of his,
or like the spider should be a little higher,
I love it. It's mania, you know?
I just want to say, as someone that always comments on the costumes, I love it. I love the suit.
Oh, people are freaking out online that it's the greatest suit ever made.
I think it's
the old school one with raised webbing now, and that's what they wanted.
Well, and you know, like I think that I was thinking about like what are objectively my favorite like Spider-Man movie, like live action costumes. And I think that you kind of have to separate out the nostalgia of it. So like the Raimi suit I love because of just growing up with it, and it is so unique. And I like that we have an element of that here, which was the whole part of the end of No Way Home with him kind of taking these elements of the Tobey Andrews suits. And the Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man 2 suit often gets shouted out as kind of the most comic accurate for the big eye Spider-Man. But I have always been really partial to the Civil War, like Homecoming original Stark suit, because I like the kind of smaller Spider-Man eyes and the smaller spider. And like, other than some of the extra lines on there that people talk about, like it really is fairly classic. So to me, this is kind of my, like, it's the best of all of those. Like it has elements of them, but it really does look like pretty close to the original Steve Ditko design, with the exception of the spider that is a little bit more like the, I guess both the Raimi and like Mark Webb movie design.
Yeah. And we're not always right on this stuff, but typically, like I remember go back a year ago, we started hearing rumblings about Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four. And usually when you start hearing like all these positive things, you can kind of be, you can kind of track it and go, okay, this might be pretty good. Like, remember how much we talked about Thunderbolts? Like, we're not hearing any reshoots. We're hearing about all the practical, like they're really confident in how they're marketing this. And then that proved to be very true. And then same thing with Fantastic Four. Now the opposite side of that is like, we really loved what they did with Ironheart, but we didn't hear much about that. And what we had heard was like mixed, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was like actually really great. So we're not always right with that, but I have a very good feeling with Brand New Day, because everything I'm hearing and seeing seems to be like, I felt with Fantastic Four and stuff, the right call. For those of you who haven't seen these Instagram photos, go to the FF or at the FFW podcast on social media to follow us, because we've posted some of this. I mean, some of the aura coming out of these behind the scenes, and they're just leaning into the practical stuff. So they, it's going to sound like I'm making this up, but they literally built a rig on a tank that is maybe, I'm going to guess, 30 feet tall, and they have Spider-Man attached to it, rigged up, swinging practically like left and right as the rig is going like 30 miles an hour down the street, and they're exploding things behind him. Real explosions in downtown Glasgow. And it's like, oh my gosh, it looks so cool. For Spider-Man fans, it's back to practical swinging sets and outside in the city doing it. It just feels like it's going to be awesome. They're following so up on Scorpion. That's the other thing.
I saw he's going to be in that movie. Mark Ruffalo has now been confirmed, right?
Yep.
Since the last time.
Punisher and Hulk are confirmed, and Scorpion confirmed.
Yeah, I'm so glad they're following up on the Scorpion thing, just because that was a, not that villain specifically, but you know, we've talked about how I feel like they were kind of setting up a trajectory at the end of Homecoming that I think got put on pause a bit because of Endgame and them having to, and then No Way Home, and there was other things for them to use the Spider-Man property for. But now I think that this is a fun time to come back to a villain like that. I mean, I thought, you know, Scorpion was used really well in Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, and they kind of took a similar character design. So I think I'm just so excited that they seem to be leaning more into that and not into the multiverse stuff for the Spider-Man movie. Again, I'm like, it's not even a Marvel multiverse thing. It's just like, I love the Spider-Verse films. I think that they're pretty much perfect. I don't really think, and No Way Home, I think like I was really skeptical about, but they pulled off spectacularly. I don't think that Spider-Man as a character is actually all that well suited for the multiverse. Like the way that they've pulled it off in those properties, I think is really impressive. But the more you do that sort of thing, the further you get from what has always made Spider-Man so accessible, which is that he is supposed to be kind of the everyman.
Right.
And so you can't really do the things with him that you do with the Fantastic Four and with Thor and with Iron Man or the Guardians. So I think that like that them grounding it that way it feels really satisfying. And it's the first time we've ever gotten four Spider-Man films in one franchise. So,
and there just seems to be a fresh energy there. Every photo is Destin Daniel Cretton smiling with Tom Holland meeting fans in the outfit, and people are going crazy. It's going to be awesome. And I think it's going to be huge next year.
He's got a crazy 2026 in the works.
Yeah. He's going to have that and the Odyssey
and ostensibly Doomsday or Secret. I mean, I don't think he hasn't been announced for Doomsday, but he's got,
you know what? Doomsday. He's one of the ones that they haven't, I don't think they've officially said. It might not be. It might be that they want Spider-Man not involved in that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
To your point. But
yeah,
this year has been awesome, but next year is also going to be huge with Daredevil Born Again, made by the creators that want to make it that way. No intervention. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man Brand New Day. Anything with a Spider-Man movie. I mean, I think No Way Home grossed $1.4 billion. I know it's all changed since then, but
right. Just
crazy. And then Doomsday.
I do think if there's any movie that can, like, or any property, like franchise, that can bring people to the theaters, it's Spider-Man. I mean, you look at the
especially
box office
this fresh start of Spider-Man.
Yeah, and I mean, Deadpool and Wolverine, you know, was huge, and like we talked about, that's an R-rated movie, which automatically kind of like funnels, it excludes certain folks. But yeah, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, like, I do think, and we've got other things to cover on this episode, but I want to talk soon about the box office for Fantastic Four and Superman and Thunderbolts and some of the conversations out there. Cause I think it is this interesting, even talking about like the Naked Gun, like an interesting moment trying to read the tea leaves and figure out what the next era of the like big blockbusters is.
Well, and it's just changed. But, I read an article about how, the premise was 750 or 800 million is the new 1 billion. Like if you get to that number, it's huge. We'll talk about that in a different episode.
But you know what did get to 1 billion?
Minecraft.
Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Feels like the younger audience markets a whole different thing because parents have to go with them. So it's automatically four people going and they will go multiple times, I think. As like a way to entertain, like, oh, they love that movie. Here's 3 hours. Well, I don't have to really parent because they, 2 hours because they love the movie. That's a whole different thing. And then again, we can get this on a different episode, but the international thing has changed so much.
Right.
So like, we're not getting China numbers. Well, that was a huge part of it, you know, like that was a huge part of Endgame. So it's a totally different conversation. Lastly, I forgot to mention also Vision Quest is coming out next year and that finished filming, which I'm really excited about just because I love Vision. You know, I love Vision, the character. So next year could be a freaking slam dunk. If those are the two live shows and the two movies, are you kidding me? Okay. We'll be right back with Fantastic Four and Eyes of Wakanda after a quick word from these sponsors.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And briefly, two other things. Our two sponsors of this podcast have two new things. One, Organic Price Books has officially rebranded as Panel Bound Comics. By the way, if you still go to organicpricebooks.com, they own the domain, and our promo code still works. Nothing is changing other than they are rebranding, doing the same stuff with some new artwork and some cool stuff to Panel Bound Comics. So if you hear talking about that, know that it's the same company. Yes.
And I do want to say, just because we were just talking about this, they have some new art books that they've been stocking, which is a little bit different from you know, going and getting comics. These are kind of like half coffee table books, but also like legitimately informative in some cases, and just like great compilations of certain artists' work. One of them that they have is a book called How to Paint Characters the Marvel Studios Way, which features the Ryan Meinerding, Andy Park art that we were talking about earlier. So if you were listening to that and that sounds cool, you can go on to Panel Bound Comics, which you can still get to through organicpricebooks.com, and get that. They also have a bunch of other art books that I've been meaning to shout out for artists like David Mack and like Alex Maleev, artists that we've talked about in various contexts. So this is my non-comics pitch for Panel Bound Comics.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up now, yeah. Oh, and then the other thing is homage.com. As you're going into football season, it's time to get your football gear. They have some great stuff on there. But the shirt Robbie's wearing is the same one I have. Actually, Anik and I wore that shirt, matching shirts, to our second viewing of Fantastic Four. And specifically, I'll say, if you're going to buy something from Homage, use the link in our show notes, because then that tells them that we sent you and it helps us and helps you. So they have some great Fantastic Four stuff there on there now, including the shirt Robbie's wearing. And I'm trying to pull it open. But yeah, Pete got kind of a different one, like a totally different vibe, like a throwback comic panel type thing on a shirt, shirt. That's really cool, too. So
they have some cool Fantastic Four stuff. And like we've said, a bunch of like Avengers stuff that I haven't even really tapped into yet.
So I went to Fantastic Four for a second time. First question, have you seen it a second time?
I have not. I've been trying to set up a time for Candace and I to both go, but she's been traveling so much with work, and I'm kind of waiting for her to get back and be able to see it before I go my second time.
I couldn't be higher on this film, and I kind of want to pair it with Thunderbolts. I couldn't be higher on the two films for me. They are like Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four on a second viewing. It's the perfect glimpse into two different corners of the same universe that I love. They made a grounded level, street level movie as well as you can make it. And I love that side of it. The Winter Soldier side of it. Love it, with like the clever wit, just the right amount. It's funny. It's endearing with a really important message, and it looks amazing and it's thrilling. That's like the Marvel Studios way.
Yeah.
But they also have this branch that started with like Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor Ragnarok, where we a little bit get cosmic, and Fantastic Four is the best version of that. It's the best version of a totally different kind of movie. There aren't many jokes. The jokes that they do shoot off land. They're all funny, but it's not like overly jokey, but it's totally cosmic and it's comic based. It's ridiculous in what they're trying to do. And it's just awesome. And it's what I love about Marvel Studios. Both times I went with Anika, my second viewing, and I love watching these movies vicariously through someone. So I'm like kind of watching and I'm turning my head looking at her too. And it's just so fun to relive the emotions through somebody else. And both of them only increased my enjoyment of the movie, because there are things you pick out, and then you get to see how other people are reacting for the first time. And on that note, not box office discussion, but this is the first movie in literally 3 years, probably Spider-Man No Way Home, where I got a text from my parents where they said, just leaving Fantastic Four, we loved it. Like that they went on their own. I didn't text them and say, you need to go see this movie. They just thought they wanted to go see it. They saw it and they loved it. And Kyle Cousins sent me a picture from the theater watching Fantastic Four. And
the
it's
elusive
like
Kyle Cousins.
Right. But my point is, those are our markers, you know, like those are markers. Yeah. Now Micah and like Pete hasn't texted me. Like it's not everybody. It's not the same as what it was with WandaVision or Endgame, but with some movies like Deadpool and Wolverine or Thunderbolts, I didn't hear from them at all. And with this movie, I'm starting to get those trickle, like those texts and comments. That was easy for me to say. Those texts and comments started trickling in from people that are what I would call like the casuals, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. I even saw, I think you posted something on our Instagram about the movie at one point, and I noticed a friend of mine that I have not heard talk about Marvel in years, or really ever, honestly. I didn't even know that he was that into it, commented that he can't stop thinking about the movie, which I thought was also just kind of a sign that, again, for the people going to see it, I think it's hitting and sticking with them. Again, we can have the conversation later about this and Thunderbolts, because we're at this sort of weird spot right now where we have these two movies that I think are pretty much universally nothing is universal in the comic book movie community. Everyone hates something, but they are as close to universally loved as I think you can get. But also, like, you know, they're having these conversations about people not going to see them. But
it's still
like going to
get five or
quality,
600 million. So it almost makes me mad to have the conversation, but I get it. It's just stuff has changed, but yeah, I'm with you in terms of it's like Bob Iger wants to hold those up. He keeps like speaking and saying like, this is the new era, but yeah, they're technically smaller than Quantumania, but I think they're smart enough to know that there's other factors than the quality of the movie there.
Well, and I do want to say, because I was thinking about this week, I get it from the Disney perspective, ultimately they're a business and they need to make money, so I'm not belittling that. But I think from the fan perspective, we've talked about how there's this kind of weird thing that happens where we almost equate like the film franchises that we love with like sports teams, where it's like, you're rooting for it and you're watching the box office and like, oh man, like I want to see it overtake X or whatever. And that's great, because if you love something, you want it to do well and you want it to stick around. But there's also like, it is possible for Marvel Studios to make really great movies that make enough money for them to keep making them that aren't also the biggest movies in the world. Like, that's an okay outcome. Like, there's actually no reason why they need to be the biggest movies. Like, that in no way changes my experience watching them, you know?
Right. Literally, from a fan perspective, I wouldn't change a thing between the two movies. I wouldn't.
Right.
It's as good as we can eat. So, to your point, yes, if it's the number one movie in the world and it makes $1.7 billion, our life's a little easier. As a podcast like Disney, right? More people are tuning in. Maybe more people subscribe. That's all probably true for sure. But as a fan, it doesn't really matter to me, which is why I think I almost get frustrated, because like, I don't care about the conversation as a fan. I understand the business and what it means for the future. But yeah, as a fan, I want the talk to be more about the film and how awesome it is and what Galactus sounds like versus, you know, did it do well on Friday in the second week? I don't care.
What I mean. I think that there's just this weird thing that happens where it becomes a conversation about like, let's all read the tea leaves and figure out like, okay, what about this didn't work and how's the studio going to respond?
No, the
and it
movie
just becomes
worked.
Like a, exactly. Like I think it's just, there's a point where I'm like, why? It's something about the online culture of it all, where it's like everyone becomes an expert in all of these things, which is fine. People know way more about how that stuff works than I do. But I do think sometimes it can kind of create, like, it takes us out of the role of just an audience member.
It had a 65% drop on the second Friday. What does that mean? Are we totally broke? It's like, what the heck? That's one day. Like who cares?
It's not an industry that we work in.
Yeah. Also, by the way, I don't know if you saw this. Marvel found a way, Disney and Marvel, they made $170 million on their partnerships with Pop-Tarts, Little Caesars, and whatever. So they made this like a kind of a new thing. Remember those like little commercials where the Fantastic Four are fighting a monster for a split second and then it's a Pop-Tart show up? They made $170 million on that.
Wow.
So maybe that's the new era. Like you less from the box office, but because they did those commercials, they basically covered their marketing budget with the pay from those commercials. So if the movie costs, I don't know, and this is where people know all the numbers, and I don't know all the numbers. Well, let's say it costs $200 million to make, and they can make $170 million of that back-ish from Pop-Tarts or whatever. Then if the movie then grosses $600 million worldwide, Disney is ecstatic about it.
Yeah.
So even on that front, I don't think it's like people want to pick like a one day drop off and then talk like it's doom and gloom. Anyways, about the movie, I'm going to make a couple statements here. I think it's maybe the most impactful musical score in the MCU. I'm serious. I was sitting there thinking the entire movie, like Interstellar, is driven as well by the music. When you start off, I'm not going to do any spoilers, but when you start off the movie and it's kind of like the montage-y thing, it's very like classic 60s feeling. You get some space stuff that feels super intense. Like anytime Galactus shows up or Silver Surfer, the music changes in tone, but it's loud and it's driving the intensity of the scene I'm talking about in space. That's like one of the best scenes, to be honest, maybe the best scene Marvel's ever done. I think it's one of the coolest.
Wow.
It's up there. It's up there with one of the coolest scenes ever. And then just the whole time the music is droning, and I can't talk spoilers because if you haven't seen it, you should go see it. But I mean, I think like Endgame or some of the other Avengers movies would be the other push. And I agree. And I think that's the case,
but that's also a lot different.
It's a lot different. And even those, I'm not sure. I think of the music the whole time. I think of like Portals is such a moment and The Real Hero is a moment. And I think of these moments.
Yeah.
But when I think about Doctor Strange and Spider-Man talking on the ship in Infinity War, I can't hear the music in my head right now. I'm not thinking it that way.
Yeah.
This movie is kind of throughout the whole film, just a barrage. So shout out Michael Giacchino. Even if it's not the most, it's a top 10 musical score for them as far as the way the music impacts the film. That's my first major hot take.
No, I think I think that's fair. I want to. I know we're not going to talk about this, but I have to say I've been listening to the Superman score so much, and the Fantastic Four score is so good that I just both of those movies musically I think are really really great. And so if you are if you haven't checked those out on Spotify or wherever you listen to music, I would encourage you to do so. The Superman score is great to work to.
My second hot take is that Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four, for totally different reasons, are the best looking movies that Marvel Studios has ever created.
Woof.
There were some complaints about the CGI on the baby. And this has been such an interesting discussion to me because Vanessa Kirby came out and said that it was a real baby 100% of the time. That they had a real baby.
Okay.
On set.
I didn't know about any of these complaints, by the way.
Okay, well, just some people talking about that, and it didn't bother me at all. And I think even just getting in the weeds of it is a little bit like the box office discussion, where like, okay, your takeaway from that movie was the baby looked a little weird, like after everything you saw. I do think there's a little bit of weirdness in question when the baby is being held by the Thing, and I think it's more because the Thing is CGI'd holding a real baby. So getting that depth might be a little bit tricky, but I don't think it's necessarily the baby CGI'd there. And like at the end, when the baby claps, that really happened. The baby really clapped.
Oh, wow.
They didn't like coach it to do that. So I don't know. Like,
I have no doubt that there was a real baby on set 100% of the time. Who knows if they still had to, you know, affect something or change the reaction of the baby or the thing is CGI. Yeah, I mean, there's some question, but who cares is my point, but it is an interesting thing. Other than that, what an experience for the visual aspect. Holy crap, it just looks so good. And I got to get to Eyes of Wakanda, so I'm trying to go real fast. The only two things I'll say that caught my eye is that I think teleporting the planet is a little bit of a goofy concept. Like I was thinking like, okay, Reed, like this happens so fast and he rallies the world to do it, but like, do they know where the planet can go that Galactus can't find it? Do they know that they can land it perfectly the right distance away from the sun, a different sun that is habitable?
Yeah.
So it's like, you made this decision pretty quick, but how do we know Galactus can't then just turn his ship to the next galaxy and move over? So that's a little bit of, you got to be like, this is a comic book.
Yeah.
And it's sci-fi. But, you know, it's sci-fi. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
And I just feel like we're supposed to know that Reed Richards has thought through everything. And that's just kind of the like plot.
Right.
Armor.
That he would know what galaxy to send it to of all people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last thing I'll say that I didn't say as much in the initial reactions is just how unbelievable Galactus is, from the dread building up to him, the visual of him standing up, of the wires coming off him, of him walking around. They nailed it downtown. It never looks funny. It could look funny, but the fact that they use an actual miniature to do it makes it look insanely cool. And then I can't stop thinking about the sound his eyes make. So in a theater, it's already so loud, and they purposely turn it way up, like a Christopher Nolan movie, when he moves and he talks, his voice is so low. But those eyes, like when he zooms in on Sue, is like, it's so cool. And then his like scanning eyes, that makes me so happy. I can't.
The Silver Surfer was also something we didn't talk about enough in the initial reactions. Yeah, because that was pulled off so well.
Visually, so stunning. There's a shot of her looking at Johnny, and you see how good she looks as a chrome body. But then you can see Johnny's reflection in her face, and it's like the level of detail of making that work, because it's different than just painting her gray. You know, you got to have the reflection too. And then Julia Garner's great. The dialogue for it is fire. Are you kidding me? And she totally owns it. I love it so much. I have no preconceived notions of it has to be a male Silver Surfer, so I love it. I prefer this over the other iteration by far. So cool.
Yeah.
Actually kind of a moving driver of the film, has some special moments towards the end. Here's the last thing I'll say. We're going to probably come back to this and rank it together, and we got to get out of here in a second, but we're going to rank this together. We both think it's tier one, no question. I think you thought it was one of the best standalone comic book movies you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really, really high. Preference-wise, I was looking at my personal list going, okay, Endgame, Infinity War, Civil War, 1, 2, 3. It's hard to top if it's not an ensemble movie, but those in my mind are just such perfect moments, which is why we created the S tier, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then there's this next chunk of, and this was crazy, I'm going to include this in the next chunk of Guardians 1, No Way Home, Thunderbolts for me, Ragnarok, Fantastic Four, and Homecoming. And I think
after that,
you have very obviously tier one movies with like Iron Man, Black Panther, The Avengers, Winter Soldier. But for me, preference wise, these two films are above that. I think I would go Ragnarok, Guardians, No Way Home, Thunderbolts, Fantastic Four. But I think I'd put them all ahead of Homecoming, and I love Homecoming. It's perfect. So that's just I'm just saying that to emphasize I'm just what we're talking about here. To contextualize it, I'm flirting with one of the 8 best movies they've ever made. And that's with 3 films basically being removed from the discussion. So we're talking a top 5 movie for Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four for me. I just don't have hardly any flaws. And getting the reaction I got from Annika is like so affirming. You're like, holy crap. She's a diehard MCU fan, but just, you know, because of circumstances, getting to see it late and stuff. She loved it. And it only confirmed what I felt. Okay, wow.
But I fully agree.
Yeah, and then for Eyes of Wakanda, a brand new animated miniseries, 4 episodes, I thought it was the most fine show ever. Just totally average to me. This is going to sound way too harsh, okay? And I don't mean it to be as harsh as I'm going to sound. But I watched it and I thought to myself, I wonder who this is for. Like, I wonder, in my opinion, who this benefits. I was saying to Annika, I'm like, does Disney Plus really, are they super stoked to have this show? Are there people signing up for Disney Plus because Eyes of Wakanda's on there?
Well, you know, I think this was part of that crop of just greenlit projects from way back when it was just like kind of what we talked about in the Kevin Feige interview episode a couple of weeks ago, where it's just like, I really think that they were like, they wanted to populate Disney Plus with as much content as they could. Because, you know, I think the thing that's kept Netflix ahead in the streaming wars is that it had a head start, but it's also constantly putting out new stuff. So it's not necessarily that like any one thing on Netflix is better than anything on HBO or Disney Plus. Because I mean, Netflix does have some great stuff, but I think it's the quantity aspect. So I feel like this goes back to a time when it was just like, we can have another show. Yeah, let's do it. Like, we can do What If, and we can green light Marvel Zombies before we ever even show the zombies in What If. Yeah, sure. But you know, I will say from my perspective, I had very low expectations. I liked it. I thought it was great. I mean, like, for what it is, I liked that it works within the MCU, like that it can be something that doesn't really alter anything, but I think it can slot in. Like, I noticed that they put it in Disney Plus, like within the chronological timeline. Mm-hmm. And I would say for me, I thought it was stronger than any season of What If.
I think I mean this sincerely and humbly. I think it's just, I'm not an expert in this, is what I think. I think it's just not totally my bag. It's not, I don't know. I never get as pumped for an animated thing.
Sure.
In general. And I don't have like a ton of knowledge on like the animation style, what makes it really cool or unique to me. It looked kind of weird, but then I'm sure there's some cool thing. I don't know. I don't have a lot to say because I'm not an expert. I'll say the positives. I'm with you. I actually thought the Killmonger tie-in was pretty fun.
Yeah.
To see that relic and then see him at the very end. I early on in that episode pointed out Donica. I'm like, oh, it's gonna be that they need to put it back. And I thought the conception, like the idea of all of these main events or legends of events through the eyes of Wakanda was kind of a fun idea. So going all the way back, I remember hearing
I thought
that
you would like the Trojan War episode.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I kind of like the going back through history stuff with now how Wakanda was involved. That was fun. Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, I am a sucker for that time period.
I thought that, I because of the way that they released it, where it was just four episodes all at once and they were all like 20 minutes. It was like, I watched it all in one sitting.
Same.
On like a Saturday morning, I think. And yeah, it was nice. It was like I was never bored. I was like, I thought that they tied together well. Like, it was an anthology, but it tied together in a way that I thought was a lot more organic than the way that What If always tries to tie its episodes together at the end of those seasons.
Well, like I said, I think picking those different time periods and going throughout all of history, being like, here's how Wakanda was still involved. That's a good way to tie it in.
And I was reading that I think the animation style, which is unique, was at least in part inspired by like certain African art styles. Mm. So I think that they were kind of trying to carry over the spirits they've brought to the Black Panther movies. I like that we didn't get a ton of Black Panther focus in it. You know, like I thought it was kind of interesting seeing the other aspects of the Wakandan culture.
Yeah, it wasn't called Black Panther: Eyes of Wakanda. It was just Eyes of Wakanda.
And so, again, was it something that I needed or was waiting for? No, but maybe it was because my expectations were low going into it, but I think if you are somebody that really loves revisiting the Black Panther movies and really loves Wakanda and like the culture that Marvel Studios has created, like the, you know, fictional culture there. I do think that this did a good job of kind of mining that without really, you know, sometimes that stuff, it's like what I talk about with like the Han Solo movie. Like sometimes mining the history of a certain property or character actually like devalues it in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like I think sometimes you can do more damage than you can do like improvement. But this was not that. I think at a high level, I would probably rank this, like I said, above the What If seasons, in part because, you know, it was tight and the four episodes were like, there was never a moment where I was like, oh, yikes. And I think that they knew what they had. They were smart about the release schedule. It's not to the level of X-Men 97 or your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. But it's also not like laughably worse. Like, I don't think it's like, I mean, we can't even have a conversation about those projects at the same time. So, you know, I think it was to me, it was a win for Marvel Studios insofar as they were, you know, wanting people to put eyes on this, which like it was just sort of kind of like Ironheart. They just like slid it out there right after Fantastic Four came out in a way that was.
Yeah, but then I ended up loving Ironheart. Yeah, I thought it was good. This is a true insecurity. We'll close the episode on an insecurity, me getting real vulnerable. Like, I feel like I'm good at talking about things that I'm passionate about, and you know me as a human. There are like seven categories that I get. I can't explain how excited I get about something, whether it's Marvel Cinematic Universe or some video games or Kirk's career or football in general or all kinds of things. But if I'm not passionate about it, it's hard for me to come up with talking points on something, which is weird for a podcast. But when you and I started the podcast, it was because I was already passionate about every project that had come out. Right. So I always knew there was going to be a hurdle of if something's not totally my bag, but now I have a podcast talking about it. I always knew that was going to be a little bit weird for me. And so I don't say anything I said to be funny or bash it. It's not for me totally. And so I don't know what to add. I've been pleasantly surprised with like your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. That was something I thought would be like this,
right.
But then it got me so captivated that the opposite happened. Now it is one of my things, but so I sincerely mean like, I hope people enjoy it. I just am not the person to add a lot of context to this. Does that make sense?
I think that's fair. I do, you know, and I think it's very, that stuff is project specific. And to your point, I think animated stuff is, for whatever reason, it's like an added barrier for folks. I mean, probably for everyone, I guess, like as you get older, it's like you have to, there's kind of this level of like, well, is it like a kid's animated show or is it like a good animated show?
It's weird that I even say that because the project that comes to my head that got over that barrier obviously was the Spider-Verse stuff. But even then, I think you're right that when it first was announced, I was like, I don't need an animated show.
Yeah.
I don't need a movie that's animated.
Where is it?
But like Toy Story is technically animated. It's a different kind of animation that obviously played a huge role in my life. So it's possible for sure. But I think you're right. I do have to get over a barrier first. I think you're right.
And I think that is kind of it's an interesting cultural thing because I've thought about this a lot to go all the way back to the beginning of the episode, watching the Walking Dead and having watched Invincible. And, you know, both of these are TV adaptations of Robert Kirkman comics. And I think that the Walking Dead show in live action is so often hamstrung by the fact that it is live action. But on the other hand, I think it set the record at one point for like the most viewed network show ever. And obviously, like, I don't think Invincible is ever going to pull numbers like that. And so I think that there's kind of there's like a give and take. But I think for me, what I've come to value about well done animated projects is how you can do things like that are creatively kind of bolder. The problem is I think you can't let that be an excuse to go off the rails, which I think is part of my complaint with What If sometimes. It's like just because you can do something that's crazy and goofy doesn't mean that you necessarily should.
Hmm.
Like, it now you're like, there are still rules in terms of how invested I need to feel. And if it just feels like all I'm seeing is a bunch of colors across the screen that don't really add up to anything, then that's not any added value. But I think that here it was, you know, like the cost of doing a show like this, where it, like, if you think about doing an episode where you see a Wakandan agent in like the Battle of Troy,
like live action, how much live would it cost?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it would be
absurd.
Like, not in any universe worth it.
Have you to know? Rebuild the castle and get Achilles is like cast as somebody.
But instead you can just have kind of a little like well done, like mini story. And I think that that's part of the value, but
I think I agree with you, by the way, too. I'll just say that's where I would place it. I would, it's not Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man or X-Men 97, but I think it's, I cared more than What If, for sure. So, yeah. So, kind of jam-packed episode today. I thought Eyes of Wakanda was just fine, but I'm open to more discussion about it. If you want to chime in on Discord or something, I'm open to other thoughts. I have already seen some people that loved it, which is awesome. And then, yeah, like I said, we have some fun stuff coming up on Friends From Work Plus. You can see all the merchandise behind me. I'll be shipping these out. If you sign up for a year-long subscription to Friends From Work Plus on Apple or Patreon, I'll send you a free merchandise item. And we're going to be talking about the box office and all that stuff on Friends From Work Plus, as well as Marvel's coming up next week. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Don't forget those things. And then we'll see you back here either next Monday or next Thursday, when we'll be chatting with Chip Zdarsky, legend, next Thursday here on Friends From Work. Thanks for listening. We'll see you.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.